Okay, item number two, report and possible discussion on quarterly portfolio report by BlackRock, Merrill Lynch, John Haas.
Yeah, I'm just going to introduce Jeff Hewlett with Merrill Lynch, and then Jeff Biggers, who's also with BlackRock. They will go through their presentation of the quarterly investment results.
Being in a little bit of different setting, instead of bouncing around like we did the other day, we're going to stay in sequence with the slides. But just a synopsis on the actual plan. First, we're covering the period of March through May, which is the quarter that we're covering. There's been slight improvement for that quarter. The asset allocation of the plan, very little difference in that change. No major issues concerning prime, subprime, or anything of that nature. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jeff, and he'll go through the actual portfolio itself.
Thanks, Jeff. Good morning. I guess we can go to the next slide. Might have to advance a couple. One more. And this is really an outdated slide. This only goes through 2007, showing the inflation and real GDP and corporate profits after taxes. Of course, the one thing you see on the far right-hand side is what's happening in the calendar year 2007. It has continued in 2008, which has been a dramatic reduction in corporate earnings. Most of that is due to what's happening within the financial sector. On to the next page. This is really the result. The Federal Reserve has gone in and aggressively lowered the federal funds rate all the way down to the current level, which is now at 2%, in an effort to kind of mitigate some of the effects that the mortgage and the really subprime assets have had on the financial companies inside the United States. And even now, it's become more of a global problem. Next slide. As a result, Fed dropping interest rates by 3.25% all the way down to 2 has caused the dollar to weaken considerably, trading at near all-time lows versus the euro and the pound. You see the trade-weighted dollar index on the left, followed by also another result is commodities priced in dollars becoming more expensive. You can see it's not just that CRB index, it's specifically crude and precious metals and agricultural products that are causing the biggest problem for the overall economy right now. On to the next slide. Looking at what the effect on the housing market has been, again, there's really three things that are causing a problem for economic growth right now. One is just the general financial crisis that we're in with the amount of bad debt that's out there on banks' balance sheets. Second is the home market, and third is going to be the price of energy. We'll have another slide on that. But home sales, you can see big declining move in the blue on monthly new home sales. And on the right side of that chart in the green, monthly supply of new homes hitting all-time highs. You've got inventory of homes at its highest point since 1981. Our thought that until you get the housing market improving, it's going to be a pretty difficult time on the overall consumer. The chart on the right showing you the Case-Shiller House Price Index. Now, this is not really the case in Texas as much as it is national, but you're getting negative year-over-year depreciation in the housing market. Again, that has a lot to do, that's affecting the consumer confidence level. On the next slide, looking at how this is playing into unemployment, you can see the unemployment rate on this chart on the left. At the far right, you can see that that's starting to tick up. We're now seeing unemployment at over 5.5 nationally. Then on the right side, you can see this is a different way of looking at most CPI figures you see there that are reported. It's usually core inflation, so that they've taken out the food and energy component. What we're doing here is just focusing on the food and energy component because that's really where the problem lies right now. It's interesting, if you look at the overall CPI, food and energy only make up about 23% of that figure, although that's where all of the price pressure is within the CPI. You can see right now, and I think this is even a little underrated here, showing you what the CPI for energy and food have been. Next slide. Looking at the U.S. economy specifically and looking at the S&P 500 earnings, looking at this chart on the left, if you go in there and look about mid-2007, where you start seeing those bar charts go below 0%, that's where, you know, again, the credit crisis reared its head in the summer last year. You see earnings in the third quarter, fourth quarter, first quarter, and now we're still in the middle of reporting season on the second quarter of 2008, but that's four consecutive quarters of negative earnings year over year. As a result, you can see what's happened to stock market performance over that time. Actually, if you were to take out financials out of that, at least for the second quarter, you would actually have positive year-over-year numbers. It's just, you know, we've seen some huge write-downs within the financial sector as they're trying to get those assets marked to market. But what you'll notice is that third quarter and fourth quarter, we start to run across some very easy comparisons against the third and fourth quarter of 2007, where we actually think that we'll be through this profits recession and that earnings will begin to look much better. Chart on the right just showing you, again, as a result of the weak dollar, exports have actually been booming. And again, we think the dollar does stabilize here, so you might not see the continued strength in exports as we have over the past few years. Next slide. This is just going into our major sector overweights and underweights in the portfolio. Continue to be overweight information technology. This is one sector that gets over half of their earnings from overseas, again, benefiting from a weak dollar. Healthcare as a defensive sector, energy, again, very tight supply-demand relationship, underweight utilities, financials, and really consumer stocks. On the next page, this is kind of a periodic table of returns showing you all of the major asset classes within the equity market. And followed out to the far right, you can see year-to-date, now this is only going through the first quarter, but actually small cap stocks were your best performing for the first quarter at down 7.5, followed all the way down to large cap growth, down 10.2 for the first quarter alone. That light blue that's sucking up from the bottom is large cap. That's the S&P 500, that's the benchmark that we're using for your portfolio. Again, second from the bottom. I also follow that out, going back in the past, see where S&P 500 has been charted against a value index, mid-cap, small-cap, and international. On the next slide, just a picture of the fixed income market. The bond market's actually been pretty good, and you see why. On the left side of that chart, in the blue, that's what the yield curve looked like back at the end of September 07. And you fast forward to that red line at the end of the March quarter, you can see the effect of Fed's aggressive interest rate decreases, really showing a very steep yield curve that's usually indicative of better economic growth in the future. In fact, if you look at the yield curve in the United States, we actually have the most positively sloped yield curve out of all of the other developed economies. So looking at France, Germany, Canada, Japanese yield curve is still slightly, it is positive, but all those other yield curves I've mentioned are inverted. Next slide. And we can actually go through this because we're not talking about tax-exempt bonds for this plan. So in summary, I think the major factors that are still going to be headwinds for economic growth, price of oil, although it's come down considerably from its peak, you're still up about 60% year over year. And the fact that we're all happy at gas at 380 is still, it's going to take some getting used to, I think. But what you're seeing with the price of oil, it had gotten so high that we saw significant demand destruction in both United States. We're now seeing year over year, our demand for crude is down 4.3%. In Europe, it's down 0.3%. Now, the big, you know, growth there has still been China at positive 7% year over year. But what's happened within the last quarter is China and a lot of other developing economies are starting to take those subsidies away and letting their consumers pay the real price for crude and refined product. And you're going to see that demand destruction will eventually get through there. So we think that crude could trend lower, but you still have to look at supply and demand, and it is a very, very tight balance right now. If you did see some sort of shock, we could easily see oil move right back through 150 again, and at that point, that really does significantly affect economic growth. And right now, we're still feeling the effects of higher oil prices, and you know, we'll feel it into the third quarter and fourth quarter of this year. The other major concern out there has been the mortgage market, how that's affecting housing. Right now, Congress is voting through some measures to help out the banks, start to get some of these loans at a better rate and a, you know, get it to where the loan value's not more than the house price. And so that, you know, we could debate on how effective that's going to be, but it is something that will help the housing market recover. And we just go on and look at the credit prices. Credit spreads are still elevated. People are still willing to buy treasuries at very, very low rates, as opposed to going out and buying a corporate bond or an agency or a mortgage bank, because, again, they're concerned about what's going to happen within corporate profits. And are there still big write-downs that are yet to be made inside the financial companies? So that's kind of the overview of what we've been through. If we go to the next slide, I'm going to advance a couple here. One more. This is it's large cap core balance is the investment objective. And again, we have a formal investment policy on record. The benchmarks that we're using for the equity components, the S&P 500, for the fixed income portion, was in the Lehman Brothers Corporate Government Bond Index. Some portfolio characteristics, beta 1.03, it's actually closer to 1.01. Has a Friday correlation coefficient 0.93, Sharpe ratio actually negative 0.7, again, given that the stock market's at negative returns. This is showing you two different pie charts. The one on the left is going back one quarter ago, so the end of the February quarter, we were at 60% equity, 38% fixed income, 2% cash. As of the end of the May quarter, 62% stock, 35% fixed income, and 3% cash, for a total account value plus accrued income at the end of May, $26,266,000.
That fixed income and cash, is there any exposure to bank savings plans or CDs? Are we overexposed in a certain area on the short cash? Or
we don't have any bank CDs in the portfolio. In fact, we'll get to that. There's a breakdown of the fixed income in one or two slides.
Let me ask a quick question, because it came up about 10 slides ago. I was thinking about what you were saying, but the Fed was really aggressive in lowering rates. But because inflation is beginning to be out there, is the Fed going to be just as aggressive on raising rates, and what's that going to do to the fixed income and the bonds and that yield curve you're talking about?
I think they will be as aggressive when they can. The problem is they're in a terrible bind right now. They would like to have already taken some of those away and probably would be more comfortable with 2.5% Fed funds rate than 2%. Again, given the inflationary forces that are...
The reason that I asked the question, there was one graph that you didn't really spend time on, and there was a green thing up there where it was talking about other countries purchasing our bonds.
Right.
And there was a very low in this last quarter. It really came down substantially. Is that going to continue, or are they already betting ahead that that's what's going to happen, preparing for that, or what was that?
Well, no, you're right that we did see, we would expect to see net purchases decline given the fact that the dollar's been so weak, and that, it's very obvious that the Fed's in a bind. Inflation is present. You would like to have higher Fed funds, but we can't right now because the financial system is so fragile right now, given, the fallout of Bear Stearns and IndyMac. There could be more coming. It's also an election year, very difficult to...
And the previous, I guess it's the slides up there right now, we've decreased our fixed income. And is that part of what we're doing? We're rebalancing, saying, okay, right now stocks are cheap and we better get what we can for some of the fixed income. Obviously, to be balanced, you can't get out of that. But
correct. It's a relative value bet there. Stocks are trading at the cheapest level they've been at in the last 10 years. Historically, if you look at a big, long stretch of time, stocks have averaged around 10% annualized. If you look at the Wilshire 5000, which is the broadest measure of the United States stock market, the trailing 10-year annualized return is now 2.05%. Talk about making some actuaries sick. I'm trying to get where you need to be. It hasn't, it's been a very, very difficult decade for stocks. So we think that when we look at all these different measures of where interest rates are, where they're likely to go, look at valuations on stocks, which currently the valuation on the S&P 500 is a little below 13 times earnings. If you go back and look at in the year 2000, S&P was trading about 33 times earnings. And so market looks pretty attractive here. You know, the investment policy really only allows you to go up to 65. So we're a little, you know, heavier than we were, again, as we think stock.
Well, I know I heard someone the other day say that if you average the last number of corrections to the market, that they've averaged 25%. And from our high, 25% was 11.4, and I think we just got there.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is, okay, that's the correction. There may be some volatility, but we're probably not going to stay down.
You know, we think stocks outperform bonds and cash over the next 12 months.
Okay.
Now, it's going to be a grind, but we think that it's the most attractive asset.
Okay. Very good.
Next slide. This is showing you a breakdown of the top 10 holdings in the account. ExxonMobil, Chevron, the two largest, IBM, Hewlett Packard, Johnson & Johnson, Occidental Petroleum, Disney, L3, Pfizer, and Accenture. On the right, it shows you what the sector weights are, but if we actually go to the next slide, you can actually compare it to the S&P 500. Going from the left, your portfolio is in the blue, the S&P 500 has the benchmarks in the green. You can see we have a slight overweight to energy, about neutral to basic materials, overweight industrials, overweight consumer discretionary, but underweight consumer staples. If you put those two together, we're slightly underweight to consumer. Healthcare, overweight, financials, underweight, information technology, we're overweight, and then we're underweight telecom services and underweight utilities. On the next page, we start to look at the fixed income characteristics, and this addresses that question. If you look on the left side, this is the characteristics of the portfolio. 23% is in U.S. Treasuries, 10% in U.S. agencies, 41% in mortgage pools, 24% in corporates, and then 0.78, that's an asset-backed security. So there's no direct bank loans, essentially no CDs. In fact, I'm not even sure that the investment policy would allow an investment in a CD.
Talk for a second about mortgage pools. Exactly what is that?
These are your straight Fannie Mae pass-through, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac pools.
So that's not what you include in your agencies?
No, an agency is just the senior debt of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Bank, and Federal Farm Credit. The difference between the agencies is that's just a simple, ordinary note that pays interest twice a year and matures. The mortgage-backed pools are actually different pools of prime mortgages that pay monthly.
Prime mortgages.
Correct. Yeah, there's no subprime exposure. Given what's happened in the last month or two, what used to be an implicit guarantee by the United States government on their agencies has now become more explicit as the federal government has stepped in to say that we are not going to allow Fannie and Freddie to fail. Now, if you owned preferred stock or common stock of Fannie or Freddie, in the event that these did have to have government bailout, I think those people lose out. But the senior debt, which is in that agency area, and the mortgage pools do have more of an explicit guarantee now than ever.
Do you value those mortgage pools? Do you have a pricing mechanism for those, and what have they done?
Year to date, they're probably about in line with the limit aggregate.
Okay.
We don't have to do our own pricing because these are liquid. The stuff that the banks are having to charge down is their tier three assets that no one can buy because they don't trade. Average credit quality is AA+ compared to the benchmark, which is AA. Our average duration is about 4.53 years, slightly shorter than the benchmark. Average maturity is a little over 7 years. The average yield maturity is 4.98, and the average current yield is 5.14.
Do we own any Fannie Mae preferred stock or Freddie Mac preferred?
On the next page, we look at the performance. And looking at the long chart at the bottom, starting on the left where it says total portfolio, this is the combination of the equity and the bonds. Trailing 3 month return of 2.37. The equities have been up 4.74, while the fixed income was down 1.29. For comparison purposes, the S&P 500 over the same time period up 5.77. The Lehman GovCorp Bond Index was down 1.63. And then that next, the second from the bottom, that S&P 500, that's total return, 60%. Lehman Brothers GovCorp, at 35%, 5% cash. That's a blended benchmark that we have. It was up 2.98 for the trailing 3 months. Going over one column, year-to-date, portfolio's down 1.81, equity's down 3.71, fixed income up versus the S&P, which is down 3.8. Trailing 12 months, one column over, down 1.31, equity's down 6.28, bonds doing very well, up 7.42. The S&P over the same time frame was down 6.7%. The Lehman Brothers Gulf Corp Index was 6.9. You see that blended benchmark down 1.17 on trailing 12 months. And the previous year, 5.8, and now we pick up a trailing 2-year, 3-year, 5-year basis. Total accounts, 7.05 on a 2-year, 8.45 on a 3-year, and 8.43 on a trailing 5-year basis. Outperforming the blended benchmark, and the equities are outperforming the S&P 500, and the fixed income's outperforming the Lehman Gulf Corp over the trailing 5-year. The rest of the slides just shows this another way graphically, and it shows all the holdings that were in the account as of the end of May, and broken out by sector. I'd be happy to entertain any questions or address any comments.
Considering the June we had, any idea how we fared through that?
We did better than the market in June. It was a very bad month. Market was off 8.4% in the month of June alone. I mean, that's a bad year. We got it in full month. And we did better, but we were, I think, still down about 8%. The fixed income is doing better, beating benchmark as well. Year to date, we're going to be right about in line on the equity side with the S&P 500.
That's the program that Bob Dahl manages, is that
correct?
Okay. Does he ever pass through here?
He does come through Dallas. Well, in fact, he's going to be in Fort Worth in August sometime. He's on vacation, and he stops here, picks up his kids, does a meeting, and then goes up to Colorado. But he basically, he'll go to Dallas for a day, Houston for a day. I'd love to get him through here in Midland and some other areas, but you should see his schedule. It's
right on there.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Any other comments, John? Would you like to make?